Last week on this program, I mentioned a newspaper article in the Los Angeles Times, June 24th, 1981, about David Murdoch, a very secretive man, only one article written about him in 1979, allegedly has $500 million. He has $200 million in stock that's on the stock exchange, and the rest is his own separate money with no special accounting. And I talked about the questionable background of some of his investments that are terribly important. His roots were allegedly from Detroit, Michigan, into Phoenix, Arizona, and then Los Angeles. Long, strong contacts with Barry Goldwater, with John Connally, former Secretary of the Navy, former governor of Texas at the time Kennedy was killed, and a very important man in U.S. history. He hired Robert Haldeman, Murdoch did, after Watergate, after he got out of jail, and he's the angel behind the what he hopes is the future Republican governor of California, Lieutenant Mike Curb, and he also funded the campaign of Chief of Police Ed Davis, now a California senator, and Ed Davis is the man mentioned by Lewis Tackwood in the Glass House tapes with his criminal conspiracy section and his Operation Chaos and the assassination plans that they had and the dirty tricks that the Los Angeles Police Department did with the FBI and CIA while Tackwood worked for them. Now, this week, there is another important article similar to the Murdoch article, only instead of the Los Angeles Times, it's in the Washington Post. And this is about a man named Richard Mellon Scaife, S-C-A-I-F-E. And if I'm going fast with these names, the people listening to this broadcast can write to me and send a self-addressed stamped envelope. And I'll enclose the bibliography of the sources of information so you can look them up at the library and copy them if you want. Mr. Scaife is described in the Washington Post as the mystery angel of the new right. In the LA Times, we had a little peek at David Murdoch, and now we have Richard Mellon Scaife. This story headlines how Richard Mellon Scaife shelled out $100 million to bring many, many voices of his conservative chorus. Well, he's related to the Mellon family, richest family in the United States. There are some good books on the Mellons, and I'll give you the list of those maybe next week. The article tells about a man who worked at KNXT Radio in Los Angeles, the CBS affiliate, and John Cox Jr., an aide to Barry Goldwater, and they met with an aide of Mr. Scaife's, and he gave them $100,000 to start a foundation for American communications. Mr. Scaife is not only one of the richest men in America, but he is the most important man in forming public opinion. Now, it's very hard to believe that when the founding fathers wrote the Constitution, that they had people with $500 million and $100 million in private trusts that nobody can get to check out who these people are, or that they can control the communications market to tell us who our enemy is, who our friends are, who we should fight, when we should go to war. This is what Mr. Richard Mellon Scaife's hobby is having conferences, think tanks, bringing in professors, bringing in federal judges, giving them weekends, days, courses. And he seems to be the hidden man behind much of the far right. And somebody seems to be catching on, or somebody seems to be angry enough to be printing these articles now about Murdoch and Scaife and realizing that the Constitution and the rights of the American people somehow is usurped by these moguls who have moved in to take over all means of communication. I got an article from the Houston Post this week that the Mellons just hired the head of NBC and the director of Associated Press to be on the board of directors of Gulf Oil. Gulf Oil is the Mellon family. But this one character has taken his interest to take over the news media. Another member of the family that we can go into, the Hitchcock member, was behind Timothy Leary and the CIA in dispensing LSD to those people who would be of the left or be of the kind of mentality that would drop out of society during the Vietnam War period. They took care of drugging and doping those. That was another member of the Mellon family. This one has a consuming desire to control the news media and collect facts and data for seminars and groups on what he thinks should be before the American people to influence their public opinion. He's involved with publications in Pittsburgh. He has newspapers, and also James Watt, the controversial fellow with our environment. You like Mr. James Watt? Well, SCAFE is the largest single donor to what is known as the Mountain States Legal Foundation. James Watt was president of Mountain States Foundation at the time that SCAFE was putting money into James Watt. When you want to protest your shores and you want to protect your shores from drilling or cutting the trees down or whatever it is, you're not fighting James Watt. You're fighting the Mellon family, who made up their minds that that land is useful for something other than sitting under a tree or being out in the ocean unpolluted. He was President Watt of this Mountain States Legal Foundation, and for a while people thought Joseph Kaur was a large contributor to the Heritage Foundation, the think tank, Joseph Kaur from Denver, Colorado. Now it turns out that it's the SCAFE family, the Mellons, and that this Mountain States group, the Legal Foundation, that was described as being interested in timber, utilities, and mining interests. The largest single donor to the whole group is the same man who funds the Heritage Foundation. Now, that Heritage is a think tank whose director was part of the Mooney organization. He left the Mooneys to come to the Heritage. Mooney had money that also, I was told, and I've mentioned before on broadcast, had come from Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany. The Heritage Foundation has 11 members of it that were a part of Ronald Reagan's transition team. And SCAFE, until now, is described as the mystery angel, and he put money into the Heritage Foundation. And when you see quotations of opinions on the Soviet Union and war and peace and what we need in the terms of weapons, these people are absolute fanatics into the subject that war is necessary and that the Soviet Union has to be wiped out. Our allies aren't agreeing with us, and they're getting scared. And that's the important thing, is that creeps like this, who are the richest family in America, can own all these foundations and give propaganda page after page, institute after institute. But when it comes to the push and shove, the Dutch, the French, the Germans, the people in European countries are scared of Ronald Reagan and Alexander Haig and the Heritage Foundation and Georgetown University Center for Strategic Studies. He's the major beneficiary of those. He's a long, close associate, he was, of J. Edgar Hoover, who was vice president of Interpol. That was Hitler's secret police organization that continued after the war, not finding drug connections. But I don't really even know who Interpol ever finds, except that they have data banks on most of us around the country. He's a long admirer of Barry Goldwater. So he and David Murdoch, I'm sure, come from the same fabric, where one is taking care of politicians like Mike Curb and a future appointment of John Connally, of Alexander Haig's pushed out, and Ed Davis, and so forth. While one is taking care of politics in this state, this fellow, Richard Mellon SCAFE, is interested in the news media. He's the second largest stockholder in the Mellon Bank. He has a home in Pebble Beach, California, and in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and a lot of other places. And as I say, the money came from Gulf Oil stock, a big investment, the first Boston corporation, and holdings newspapers in Pennsylvania and around the country. He also took over from John McGuff the controversial newspaper in Sacramento, the Sacramento Union. McGuff was linked to propaganda from South Africa that was being sent over here by Mr. Volster and Botha to blow up how wonderful South Africa is, how much fairness to the blacks, how great the economy. Money from South Africa as a propaganda machine was put into John McGuff in 1977, the Sacramento Union, and then Richard Mellon SCAFE took that over. He's the owner of the Kern House Enterprises, a London-based news agency. He was the owner. It folded up at the time of Richard Helms' questioning in 1968 before some investigations. It was reported that this was a CIA front and a communist anti-communist propaganda agency in London. He worked with the CIA, of course, and gave $1 million, controversial to Richard Nixon's campaign in 1972. When Nixon was on the way out after June of 72 with Watergate, in 73 is when he pushed the funds for the new right. In 1973 was the year that Ronald Reagan wanted to start the Institute to study the causes of violent behavior at UCLA with the CIA and Nazis from Germany and Dr. Delgado from Boston and Spain to do electrode implants on people. And 1973 was the year that Jonestown was leased by a bank in Canada, people from Germany and England. He started the New Right in 73 and began pushing the magazines and articles and various foundations, and he now gives an admitted $10 million a year. It's very hard for the left or the Women's International League for Peace or Peace and Freedom or the individuals to fight organizations like this that are so powerful, and it's good that the Washington Post is now having an article about him. They have a section, Where the Money Goes, where Mr. Scaife has been giving his money since 1973. The Center for Strategic and International Studies, they send that Nazi Kissinger all over the world, tout him from the center, and also our ambassador to the UN, Ms. Kirkpatrick. Scaife gave them $5.3 million recently, Georgetown University in Washington, the Committee for a Free World in New York, the Committee for Present Danger, Hoover Institution on War, Revolution, and Peace. He gave them $3.5 million. That makes up a bulk of the cabinet of Ronald Reagan and the warfare state. The Institute for Foreign Policy Analysis at Cambridge, the National Security Program from New York University, $6 million for the National Strategy Information Centers. He has economic symposiums and councils, one in Westwood Foundation for Research in Economics and Education, $1.4 million, International Center for Economic Policy Studies. It goes on and on. Every one of these organizations and group and legal group in Atlanta, Georgia, Sacramento, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Chicago, Denver, Colorado, that's the Mountain States Legal Foundation. See, when they mention legal groups, it says Mountain States Legal Foundation, Denver, Colorado. But that's just one of eight legal groups. And then Mr. Watts, the Secretary of the Interior, wants to destroy the ecology of the entire United States. So when you add up where these millions are going, $10 million a year, they're going into places like the National Strategy Information Center. Every year they invite young people there for seminars and influence their thinking about the future. The Law and Economics Center in Atlanta, Georgia. I read about that a long time ago, but the article didn't say that Richard Mellon Scaife was behind that, where they invite 137 federal judges for economic courses on the evils of socialism and labor in favor of being hard on communists, I suppose. The Institute for Contemporary Studies, the presidential counselor, the founder of that was Edwin Meese, and he was put in by Scaife. Scaife has newspapers he supports, and he had a seminar for Henry Kissinger from the Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies. The list goes on and on in the Washington Post about this man. Controls are the largest donor to WGBH in Boston, radio broadcasting, WQLN in Erie, Pennsylvania. He sponsored a 10-part series on Milton Friedman's economy. I see these things on television, these series, and these men miss the boat. The country's bankrupt. The industrialized nations are sinking. And these are the think tanks funded by the richest family in America, fanatics who don't want coexistence but would rather go to war than reduce their profits in any way with the working people and bring peace and safe, clean air to the world. They are totally, and I believe, mentally sick, and something has to be done about them. And I guess one of the first things is to smoke them out. So it's commendable that there was this article in the Washington Post. This is July the 12th, 1981. Now, an important magazine that he got out was the Daedalus, D-A-E-D-A-L-U-S. And in this magazine in 1978, and this is very important, he hired a Harvard historian, Richard Pipes. That's the same Mr. Pipes that told the Soviet Union that they'd have to give up communism or be wiped out. That was one of the first speeches of the Reagan team. As a matter of fact, March 29th on this broadcast, I referred to Richard Pipes, one of the five people in the State Department fighting among each other against Ronald Reagan. I mentioned Alexander Haig, Walter Stessel, Richard Pipes, Richard Allen, and William Casey, who's sliding out on his ass not soon enough. And under Pipes, March 29th, I said Richard Pipes, the Harvard Soviet expert with Harvard's Priscilla Johnson. That was a woman that worked for the CIA with Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald in the Soviet Union. It was Pipes who told the Soviet Union, as soon as Ronald Reagan was in office, they have to give up communism or go to war. Well, whose blood fights the war? Whose money pays the taxes? Whose homes are ruined? Who takes care of the refugees? What right has Richard Mellon Skife to have be the mouthpiece for people like Pipes that are telling these people that we have to go to war? And I mentioned in March of this year that Richard Pipes worked with George Bush. He's our vice president now. He was director of the CIA. At the time that John Paisley from the Team A of the CIA was confronting Team B, Paisley was murdered and Pipes headed Team B. Well, the Washington Post has an article that Pipes was encouraged and got money from the Skaife charity up to $50,000. They proposed to be a backer for Pipes, and the idea was this, that the CIA is too favorable to the Soviet Union, that their figures aren't right. So we'll get an outside person to put up a fund, and Mr. Bush, the director of the CIA, had Team B. And this article in the Washington Post very cleverly leaves out Team A, because the man opposing Pipes, and Pipes was funded by Richard Mellon Skaife, was the John Paisley who was murdered. Now, Paisley had a direct telephone communication on his yacht down to Australia at the Nguyen Bank that was funding Michael Townley and the torture machine down in Argentina. So these aren't nice guys we're talking about. But Mr. Mellon Skaife puts up money for a study. Mr. Paisley, who has the opposing view, is found dead. And then Pipes goes on to become, as Washington described, our Harvard Soviet expert. He's Mr. Mellon, Richard Mellon Skaife's expert. He's not our expert, and our allies are finally catching on. The purpose of the study was, in quotes, to make assessment of Soviet military strength. And out of Team B, the Washington Post, came a lot of articles that poured out. Russia is stronger than us. Our army won't hold up. We don't have any tanks. We don't have good missiles. We don't have any warning system. Our estimates are wrong. The Russians are bent on nuclear superiority. Out of this twisted, demented mind come contracts for United Technology that Alexander Haig is president of, was getting $1 million a year. Rockwell, that our Attorney General William French Smith is the lawyer for Rockwell. The Hughes Organization, the Boeings, the Lockheeds, the warfare machinery. We make hardware, go into debt, put machinery together that people can't even figure out how to use. They couldn't use it on the desert with the sand traps in Iran. And mentally deranged people who have so much money buy up newspapers, buy up think tanks, buy the scholars, and then tell us they are the living authority on the subject, and buy up James Watt and tell us what we need to keep the ecology, the economy going in terms of coal or oil off the shelves. And it'd be interesting to know if Mr. Watt's oil that he would drill, say, off the coast of California would be Gulf oil into Richard Mellon Skaife's pocket. These things simply cannot continue, and I hope that, as I say, somebody in the Washington Post has this article, I hope they're getting on these subjects. Now, I've done many broadcasts on Colonial Dignitat and the CIA and Jonestown and the links to the intelligence community and the torture centers there. I also did broadcasts in 1979, January 19th and 26th, and those tapes are number 372 and 373 on John Paisley. Now, John Paisley was murdered. His boat was found September 24th. His body was found October the 1st. It was sent to a CIA mortuary. The hands were cut off. He was cremated. There were discrepancies in the account, and I said that Paisley worked for the CIA and the Defense Department since 1941. And worked with the Soviet Affairs and Lee Harvey Oswald. And when at length on John Paisley and the teams A and B that he was working with, and discussed that a long time ago. And the links also, I mentioned, of John Paisley and these various people, Thomas Karamessine, who was killed right after John Paisley died, around the same time period. I have to look up the date. And George de Morenschild, another person. They all died within a very short time of each other. And Lee Harvey Oswald worked with these people and the CIA. And I mentioned that their contacts were with Alexander Ziegler at the Minsk Radio Factory. That's where Marina Oswald met Lee Harvey Oswald. And Ziegler was from Argentina, and referred to the Argentine connections that goes back to the Nazi connections down in Chile and Argentine. Well, when I wrote about and read rather on the air about teams A and B, and Paisley being done in because he was team A, and Mr. Pipes moving up to be one of the officials of Soviet affairs because he was team B, I didn't know then that Richard Mellon Scaife was the man behind Pipes and those figures. But it all does come together. Sometimes I speak to young people who do research or listen to the broadcast or get discouraged because things don't move fast enough for them to get a lot of the information out to other people. They can't see it fast enough. They can't see action coming together. There are people bringing these pieces of the puzzle together for you. It's my job to interpret it. There aren't many people around that have the nerve to do it or the skill to do it, but it should be encouraging to you to know that many people are getting articles out, or like that magazine Investigator, or books like The Death on Embassy Row or the Don Fried book on the murders, the murder in Washington. These people have taken a lot of courage. The death in Washington, the murder of Letelier, they have courage. They've taken stands. The pieces that they know fit in with the pieces that somebody else knows. And hopefully, the members of the House and Senate turned down the CIA's plans to kill Gaddafi. Hopefully, there are some people with some decency left who are tired of America pushing and shoving and killing and are not going to take the voices of Richard Mellon Scaife or the Heritage Foundation or any of their think tanks and put their lives on the line for it. There's a long article in the New York Times, July the 12th, by Leslie Gelb, well-known writer, titled, NATO is Facing Paralysis of Will. The experts contend there's disputes and paralysis with NATO. Why? Because they don't go along with Richard Mellon Scaife and Richard Pipes and Alexander Haig. This article in the New York Times says that there always was worry about Washington, whether they would use nuclear weapons to defend Europe, blow Europe up at the same time, or whether they would not use their weapons for fear of jeopardizing the American territory and throw them to the Russians. By all accounts, these worries are acute, and they started gathering again with the NATO in December of 79. Our Atlantic allies are worried. German officials said we faced three crises after the war. We said, whose side are we on, Russian or American? And we chose America. In the late 60s, the question was, what should we do with our relations with the East and with the Entente? And the New York Times goes on to say the debate in West Germany is whether they made a mistake to ally themselves with us, that other countries, the diplomats in other countries, such as the Netherlands, Belgium, Norway, Denmark, are showing decreasing sympathy to almost any American world position and increasingly pick up the Russian position and have been unreliable in upholding their share of their alliance with military burden to us because they're more sympathetic. They feel that the elite in big countries are opposed to mass movements and they don't want to make things better. They want to push and shove. And this is from the New York Times. The Washington Post has an article, July the 15th, 1981, by Irving Kristol, professor at NYU Graduate School. NATO at a dead end. And remember, Alexander Haig was the head of NATO and now is Secretary of State. You'd think that his great record would follow him. And they say this administration of Ronald Reagan is faced with three crises: their foreign policy and their relationship with Russia, the administration's NATO alliances, and their policies towards the third world. The United States is performing poorly, and it's time to go on, not with inherited assumptions and inherited policies, but but to have new policies, and Western Europe has a wave of public opinion that favors unilateral nuclear disarmament, and it's gathering forces, and they don't want to be aligned with us. If it's a question of arming and getting ready to fight Russia, or disarm and take a chance that Russia will take over, our allies are beginning to go that way. And finally, the Covert Action newspaper put out by AG from Europe. It's published in New York, an article by Fred Landis, April 1981, The Spies and the Reagan Victory. And this is about the book The Spike, the propaganda machine of the Heritage Foundation, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And it's an article, I'll do more next week because we only have about 3 minutes. But it's called The Right's Revenge, and it refers to Robert Moss and Arnaud de Borchgrave, who wrote the book The Spike. And it goes into Chile and disinformation of the CIA from 1970 to 1973, the crisis in Europe, and the role of David Attlee Phillips, Richard Helms, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, and the late Thomas Karamessine. He's the fellow that worked in Russian affairs with Paisley and died when Paisley did, at the time the House Select Committee was going into the John Kennedy assassination, because that was their link to the murder of John Kennedy through Navy intelligence and the National Security Council. This article in Covert Action goes at length about the Church Committee, Senator Frank Church's committee, and the spies from the past that are into the Reagan administration. Now, the interesting thing is the link of people like Richard Mellenscaife being the funding source behind these books and so forth, and it goes into Alpha 66, the anti-Castro Cubans, and of course that goes again into Frank Chernow and Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and the highest levels of the United States intelligence, the murders in Chile, not only of Allende, but other people that I can read a whole list of them from the books of the murders that they've done and public officials. Now, these articles that have come out recently on these dogs, and they are dogs, are interesting. The one on Murdoch, the one on Scaife. Maybe next week we'll have another expose. I think that, as I say, the publications or the authors of these articles must be getting the go-ahead. Smoke these people out. Scaife was literally unknown as the man behind Watts, the Secretary of Interior, the Heritage Foundation, for most of us, or behind pipes and so forth, and Murdoch, the man behind the future career of Ed Davis or Mike Curb and so forth. Let's hope that more articles come out smoking them out, because that is the main thing that is going to help us keep some sanity, is to get these people out. Now, I didn't mention the decline of Mr. Casey, his links to Robert Vesco, the ITT affair. This is a totally unqualified man to be the head of the CIA, but he was put in because of past crimes that he knew and to keep the lid on them. He worked OSS, he worked with Hitler's Reinhard Gehlen, with Alan Dulles, formed the CIA. He's one of the earliest dogs, and he was made director of the CIA by Ronald Reagan. And it does me the utmost pleasure to hope that by next week he will be out on his butt and William Casey will not be head of the CIA any longer. They may pull another one, but they'll never get one as bad as him, or I doubt if they'll get one as corrupt. In the meantime, keep reading your papers, because there are some good articles and reviews and books, and I'll be back with you next week at this time, and you take care. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.